My name is Susan Rance, and this is the second of a series of pieces I'm going to be doing that I'm calling Being Everywhere and Nowhere, an open discussion of lesbian and gay issues. The subject that I wanted to cover today is sort of looking at civil rights issues and struggles, and to prepare for this, I went to see a friend of mine who works as a program director for a foundation in Chicago that just funds programs for lesbian and gay and organizations, and also organizations that are doing work on domestic and sexual violence. And they're called the Chicago Resource Center, and they have in their files tons and tons of newspaper clippings and proposals and stuff. And so I figured I'll go see Sarah, and Sarah will give me all the current information that I need on just what the numbers and things and issues are. So I spent the morning there and called out of the piles and piles of information that Sarah had on civil rights issues and violence, anti-gay violence. I just took a pile and made some copies of it and went home to my house and read it all from beginning to end. And at the end of reading it, I was so angry that I went over to my computer, switched it on, and just wrote. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote until I couldn't write anymore. And then I went back and spell checked it and and printed it out and put it in this little file to bring here to do this thing. And I was originally just going to look at it and speak, extemporize from what I had written. And I just sat and reread it a couple times and realized that in the strength of my anger at the time, I think I said it better than I could by extemporizing right now. So if you'll bear with me, I'm going to read to you what I wrote and then say a few words off the top of my head about it, and then immediately we can just start talking about, I think, some of the horrifying things, what I find to be quite horrifying, that it was in this little pile of information and if anybody wants to look at this, it's here to look at. I'm calling this particular piece of writing Queer Bashing and Closets, the State of Lesbian and Gay Civil Rights. No more than 20 years ago, I would probably have been booed out of this room for even mentioning lesbians and gays and civil rights in the same sentence. It was quite inconceivable that lesbians and gays had any civil rights as such. Discrimination and harassment in housing, employment, and public accommodations was a kind of subconscious norm. For almost all lesbians and gays, the closet was all-encompassing. The closet, the catchphrase that implies its own reality. Lesbian and gay folks lived lives that were so duplicitous, so affected by external and internalized homophobia, that they could only be themselves in tiny, darkened, claustrophobic rooms. Co-workers, neighbors, families, straight friends were rarely, if ever, aware of the lesbians and gays in their midst, and for good reason. Being openly gay was justification for being fired, evicted, ostracized, attacked, and in the majority of states, arrested. The only, quote-unquote, safe places were in a murky subculture of bars and clubs, which encouraged alcohol dependency and stereotypical behavior, and which were only as safe as the owner's most recent payoff to police. Raids and mass arrests were regularly held, both to look good in crime statistics and to up the cost of the extortion. Friends of mine who lived in these closeted times tell stories of the secret trapdoor in most bars through which those most at risk were allowed to crawl when the police came. Those being at risk, of course, were people in especially sensitive jobs, teachers, elected officials, and cops. And the underage, who would surely end up in juvenile detention and pervert wards if they were caught in bars. Careers could be ruined, lives destroyed for being in your only safe place on the wrong night. It was one of those murky havens, a Greenwich Village bar called the Stonewall. It was in one of those murky havens, Greenwich Village bar called the Stonewall, in 1969 that the gay liberation movement was born. After the fifth police raid in a month, the gay residents of the village exploded in anger and fought back. Riots took place in Soho for four nights in a row as gay men threw bricks and bottles at police and shouted their defiance and their identities. All across the country, the last week of June is celebrated as Gay Pride Week in memory of the Stonewall riots, the first light let in through the collective closet door. Since Stonewall, lesbian and gay Americans have become more and more visible, especially in large cities. Gay communities began to emerge and organize to claim some of the basic human rights from the iron grip of the closet, their basic human rights from the iron grip of the closet. Today I want to talk a little bit about the state of those rights and the fronts on which some of the battles are being fought. First and most immediate in implication is the question of legality. Now, I really love this, the legal question. The legality question has a funny history that goes back to Queen Victoria, Queen Victoria is its perfect example. In England, buggery or sodomy was illegal, but lesbianism was not. The reason for this, amazingly, is that Queen Victoria refused to believe that women would do such a thing and therefore refused to outlaw it. So while Oscar Wilde languished in the Tower, Vita Sackville-West cavorted with Virginia Woolf in Bloomsbury. Not really concomitantly, but you get what I'm saying. Similarly, in the United States, most states had anti-sodomy laws, which were loosely interpreted as anti-homosexuality laws and were upheld as such. And just to interject here, we'll talk more about this evening, but you will note that in the Bible, all the quote, the proscriptions against homosexuality are actually proscriptions against sodomy. The Bible doesn't say too much about lesbianism. Of course, the Bible doesn't say too much about women, period. But anyway, that's for later tonight. Other states, however, had no anti-sodomy laws, and still others had them once, but struck them from their books as antiquated. My home state, Illinois, did that in 1961. So depending on where you lived in the United States, you were either legal or illegal by definition. The situation was further complicated by states which had anti-gay laws, anti-sodomy laws, but never enforced them. My own personal experience with this took place once was in 1975. I went to St. Louis to visit some friends. And 1975 was the height, it was sort of the salad days of the gay liberation movement when everybody was sort of acting out, and anyone who was gay, lesbian or gay, acted out all over the place. You were out, you know, you told everyone you were out. And so we'd gone to a bowling alley, an all-night bowling alley, my Missouri friends and I, and these two women were sort of acting out for sort of drunk macho types that were next to us in the bowling alley, and all of a sudden the door opened and in walked two cops, and my two friends literally leapt apart from each other like this. And I've never seen them do anything like that, so I was like, what is it? And they said, it's the cops. We could be arrested. You're in Missouri. There's an anti-gay law. And I realized, my God, I crossed the Mississippi and became an outlaw. And it was a very weird feeling. I mean, I felt like Jesse James or something. So, in June of 1986, the Supreme Court issued its decision on the so-called sodomy laws, in which they upheld a state's right to enact and maintain such laws. Currently, there are 18 states with active sodomy laws, mostly in the Bible Belt South and West, although New York, liberal New York, just got rid of it in 1981. as gay communities emerged and organized in the areas where there are anti-sodomy laws, the laws became an issue, and an issue to be fought on the premise of the constitutional right to privacy, the old consenting adults rationale. Ominously, the Supreme Court ruled that historical prescriptions against homosexuality, quote unquote, have ancient roots, and that the importance of intimate associations in a free society, the rights of consenting adults in their own homes as part of ordered liberty, were, in the majority's words, at best facetious. The court goes on to justify state-mandated morality, an argument with frightening implications, I think, for all citizens. Now, when the court issued this finding, lesbians and gays took heart at the fact that across the country there was a tremendous outcry against this decision. People, even
when
the,
year was this, Susan?
What, 86. Even in Chicago, the Chicago Tribune, one of the more traditionally right-wing newspapers in the country, had a long editorial just saying this is the most frightening decision that the Supreme Court has ever made. And later on in 87, the Senate's rejection of the Bork nomination, basically because of his questionable stand on the right to privacy, also was somewhat heartening. And it also brought the question of the court's threat to the right to privacy up in people's, all Americans' face a little bit more. But as we speak here today, I am still illegal in 18 states, and the court has affirmed the right of any other state that cares to outlaw me. In the light of the current legislative hysteria about AIDS, which we'll discuss hopefully next week sometime, I don't think I have to be paranoid to be frightened. Other legislatures have been a bit more supportive to the basic human rights of lesbians and gays. If it comes down to it, I guess we could just move from place to place, you know, become nomads. Several state and local governments have passed non-discrimination laws. My home city is involved in a protracted battle over one right now, which I'll speak more about tomorrow. The state of Wisconsin is the only state that has a statewide gay rights law, though Wisconsin lesbians and gays are worried now that conservative Republican Tommy Thompson has defeated progressive Democrat Tony Earl, and he ran on a platform of repealing the gay rights law. Though I suppose in Wisconsin all lesbians and gays could then just move to Madison, which has a local lesbian and gay rights law. Hear a little note of cynicism in my voice, congratulations. The reality is that lesbian and gay basic civil rights are at best tenuous, and that most of the time, effort, and money of gay communities around the country are taken up with just trying to maintain simple, basic American civil rights. The only bright spot in all of this, to my mind as an organizer, is that civil rights struggles are marvelous organizing tools and are turning lesbians and gays into activists at record rates. And we'll talk more about that subject tomorrow. My cynicism has a very real and very terrifying basis, and here come the numbers. Since 1981, the incidence of anti-gay violence has increased phenomenally. In 1986, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force released a report documenting 4,500 reported attacks on gays and lesbians because of their perceived sexuality. Now, I stress perceived because many of these attacks actually were not, I mean, the people who were beaten up were not gays and lesbians. They were just perceived to be gays and lesbians. And I stress reported because studies show that about 90% of anti-gay violent attacks are not reported. That's higher. It's a higher number than prior to the emergence of consciousness around rape, unreported rapes. Okay, 90% of these go unreported. So if we're talking about 4,500, we're really talking about 45,000 attacks, physical attacks. That number, 4,500, was an 83% increase over 1985. Which was a 41% increase over 1984. Okay, so we're watching the curve just go off the map. Their survey, the NGLFTF, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, indicated that 36% of lesbians that answered the survey and 22% of gay men reported being physically attacked at sometime in their lives because of their sexuality. This means that lesbians and gays are four times more likely than the average American citizen to be the victim of a violent crime, and that violent crime would be perpetrated on them simply because of their perceived sexuality. Now let those numbers sink in for a while I give you a few examples. A group of teenagers shouting, "Diseased faggot and you're killing us all," dragged David Johnson from his car in a supermarket parking lot in San Francisco, beat him with their skateboards, kicked him and clawed his face. Johnson's jaw and three ribs were broken, his head gashed and his kidneys lacerated. "I just kept thinking, why did this happen? What did we do?" said Matthew Holloway, Johnson's lover who was with him. "It shattered our lives," said Johnson. A New Jersey gay man was assaulted by three men who extinguished cigarettes on his face, tied him to the back of their truck, and drove along a highway with him in tow. A man arrested in Vermont for the 1985 shooting and killing of a gay man explained why he shot the victim who he'd never met. "I killed him because he looked like a fag." At least 20 metropolitan community churches have been burned in the last 13 years, and several dozen ministers and staff members have been assaulted or have received death threats. 28%, before I read this one, I'll mention in Chicago, the editor of the gay paper in Chicago, Windy City Times, was sitting in his office putting the paper to bed when three people with baseball bats burst in the door and beat him senseless. They would have killed him, except Jeff McCourt, his name is a very physically, he's a runner and he's physically fit, and he was able to beat, even though they'd broken his arm in like five places, he was able to fend them off and get them out the door. But here's the scariest of these little blurbs. 28% of the incidents of violent attacks have been against people with AIDS or explicitly used AIDS-related epithets in the attack. "You're killing us, you've got AIDS," at this kind of thing. This is a quote. "One of the reasons I see it increasing, anti-gay violence, is because AIDS has been used as a way of legitimizing anti-gay attitudes," said Randy Schell, a counselor at Community United Against Violence in San Francisco. And continuing the quote, "People are getting the message that gay equals AIDS, and that it's okay to hate gay people, and it's okay to do something about it." End of quote. The AIDS-related basis for queer bashing, or fag bashing, as it's known, is the most ultimately frightening to me. Not only because persons with AIDS are in danger of losing all their rights to health care, insurance, employment, and housing because of their status, but also because AIDS is rapidly becoming a disease of poor people of color. Righteous fag bashing could quickly become a new wave of racial violence. I really believe that. Related to actual physical violence and sexual assault, which is more commonly directed against lesbians by enraged males who purport to teach them a lesson or to make them like men, is the rapidly increasing incidents of harassment of lesbian and gay students on college campuses. T-shirts with an effeminate ghost in the middle crossed out with the words "Fagbusters" underneath sold out 400 T-shirts at the University of Kansas in 2 days. A poster advertising a meeting of lesbians at Bryn Mawr bore the hastily scribbled addition, "Kill them all." When gay students at West Virginia Wesleyan complained of threats, they were informed by a dean that homosexuals weren't welcome at that institution. In my hometown, at my institutional alma mater, the great and glorious University of Chicago, a concerted hate campaign was carried out by the editors of a conservative newspaper on campus. Not only were gay organizations lampooned in the Midway Review, which is the name of the paper, but gay and anti-apartheid leaders were sent hate mail. Their parents and potential employers were called and told they were gay and had AIDS. Christmas, they received Christmas cards that had skulls and crossbones on them with AIDS written across that said Happy Death underneath. The editors of the paper were finally uncovered only because they, as the culprits of all of this, only because they went a step further and they put personal ads in the citywide free newspaper, the Chicago Reader, where they pretended to be gay graduate students looking for companionship. When gay men responded to the ads, their employers, families, and neighbors received letters saying that they were AIDS carriers. All of these missives were signed the Great White Brotherhood of the Iron Fist. Only when the Chicago police got involved were the letters traced to the editors of the Midway Review. They were suspended and barred from graduation at the University of Chicago, but all three still published the paper. The paper's now called the Chicago Student. And I saw a copy of it at the Chicago Resource Center when I was there, the most recent copy, that was, it talked about Mundelein College trying to become a nuclear-free zone, and talked about the Mundelein students as being, left-wing commie ladies, Catholic ladies, and at their liberal arts goofy school, don't they have anything better to do with their time? I mean, it's just a hate rag. But the University of Chicago chose to just sort of suspend these people from graduation, and the paper still is published down there. I tell all these horror stories to make what seems to me an obvious point. Fueled by AIDS hysteria, violation of the basic civil rights of lesbian and gay folks is on the loose. It's one thing to take an Anita Bryant type approach, or the proposition in California, I don't remember the number, that says, I don't want them teaching my kids, or I don't want anybody to tell my church who it can hire. But people are dying out there. Their churches are being burned. Women are being raped. Students are being harassed out of an education. The last time this happened, we cried out as a nation, no more. I can't see a qualitative difference. We need an affirmation of the rights of lesbian and gay citizens, both in principle and in practice in this country. That's the end of what I wrote. It poured out of me on the computer, and I guess, I mean, there's certainly other issues surrounding this stuff, but I guess I just would like to hear right now people's response to what you just heard.
What do you mean? What does illegal mean? If you're illegal, what does that mean? You don't breathe, or what?
It means that I could be arrested.
Just for being present?
Just for being.
Does that have to do with doing something?
Well, I mean, an anti-sodomy law, the one that the Supreme Court was based on, actually was this. It would happened in Atlanta. It was a gay rights activist who was very, doing a lot of work in Atlanta's gay community, and he started to receive telephone threats. That he was going to get, that we're going to get you, and blah 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 blah, and someone, it's unclear who it was, went to the police and said, "There's sodomy going on in this apartment," and the police burst in the middle of the night to the man and his lover's apartment and arrested them both, and the Supreme Court upheld the right to do that. I mean, we're talking about, consenting adults, acts between consenting adults, and ostensibly that's what can happen. In the old days, the pre-Stonewall days, it happened regularly, and then the object were the bars, and the police would just raid the bars. Everybody would be arrested, they'd all have to go down and spend the night in jail, they'd all get bailed out, but then it would be on their record. Okay, and once it was on their record, public schools would not hire you, anything that looked at arrest records in any indication. So, I mean, getting arrested in a bar prior to 1969 meant you probably would, you know, become unemployable. So it's, I mean, it's illegality, you know, but it's a very unclear illegality. What it's about, it's, you know, it doesn't say you can't be lesbian or gay. It's a, they're all written as anti-sodomy laws. And what does that mean about straight people who happen to practice sodomy? You know, I don't know. And that's, of course, the way the argument against the Supreme Court.
So, but he had no recourse on, right to privacy?
It's what the Supreme Court said in their ruling, that the right to privacy constitutionally, when you look at the Constitution, was at best, to use the right to privacy as a way to strike down anti-sodomy laws, was at best a facetious argument.
Was that at least a split decision, do you know, out of that?
It was a 5-4.
It was 5-4.
It was a 5-4, which mm-hmm. they all are now. It was a 5-4. And the decision was written by
Rehnquist, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Rehnquist. I think it was. I've got it in here. I can check it out.
But I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But it was a 5-4 decision.
I'm not proud of him.
Yeah. it's, no, really.
He happens to be a Lutheran, you see.
Oh. No comment. That's.
Well, you know, no matter what a person might think about the moral right or wrong mm-hmm. of this thing, that's totally out of line.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously out of line. I don't know how. I can't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and obviously, I mean, this bashing business, it's just totally against the law. That's all that's to it.
What happens to those cases? Are they ever...
Well,
the interesting thing about it is that no police departments in the country keep a separate category of statistics. The Chicago Police Department was begged by the gay community in Chicago to just, if the attack had anything to do with, you know, if part of it, if it took place in certain neighborhoods of the city, if the people yelled things like faggots or you have AIDS or something like that, please to just somewhere put a hatch mark so it could be followed. As in any kind of physical attack, you know, case, it depends on whether the, you know, the person's people can be apprehended, yeah, and it, you know, can be, or if it follows a pattern, there seems to be a lot of it happening. That, so what's happened is that gay communities throughout the country have banded together to keep the statistics themselves. They go and do court watching programs and check in with their you know.
Do they ever bring charges of assault?
If they can, if the person can be apprehended and the person and the person who has been attacked is brave enough, and the prosecutor thinks they have a good case and all the way down the line, it's very analogous to, in many ways, the what happened before mm-hmm. rape became a consciousness in the country, where prosecutors were you know, they didn't like to prosecute rape cases. Women never reported it to police for that reason, and also the criminal justice system was biased against it. The laws were written in such a way that very few people would actually even be, if they were brought to trial and they were convictable, they were not convicted of the offense of rape. It's the same kind of thing. The people that beat Jeff McCourt were never apprehended. The Chicago police couldn't find a charge to pin on these three guys from University of Chicago who sent out these hate letters. You know, because they didn't think they could make mail fraud stick. So, you know, I mean, there's just, the laws are not written that way, that there's not a provision in the anti-discrimination mind of the country, much less encoded in the law, that sexual, you know, the word sexual orientation should follow race, creed, religion, disablement, sexual orientation. So the criminal justice system just doesn't function. And so it's a, right now it's sort of a verging thing where gay activists are really trying to get their police departments and the people of the community to be aware that this is a really happening thing. It's happening.
And do you think that what is required is specific laws, or what's the way to go about this thing?
About what about
protecting yourself?
About protection from physical violence.
Yeah.
Probably the same kinds of things that happened with. With rape. Well, no, I mean around this stuff with rape.
Because, you know, really, you really shouldn't need a law about it.
No, it's
already there.
It's assault and battery.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's assault and battery. But, you know, and it...
So you couldn't make another law, really?
No, it's mostly the kind of thing that, where the police department would become sensitized to it, police departments where there would be more... where the community, lesbian and gay community, would feel more comfortable going to the police
with
it.
Would feel that they do have protection.
That they have protection. One of the things when, in Chicago, when Harold Washington stood for re-election last time, he stood for re-election on a promise to the lesbian and gay community that he would put pressure on the police department to become sensitized to this and to be responsible to him.
He died too quick.
He did, and we'll talk about this tomorrow. He did appoint the first paid by the city community lesbian and gay community liaison person. That's part of her job, and she's been working pretty hard, but in pretty bad conditions. So it's, it's that in terms of bashing and violence, that's really, it's got to be raised to the consciousness of people. But the scary part, and the part that I really want to try to just impress on people, is it this connection with AIDS and the justification of it because of AIDS. People that are involved in AIDS activism always talk about the parallels between the plague and the kinds of things that people did in the 13th century, when the 16th century, whatever century it was, or maybe it was both centuries, that the kinds of intense fear that AIDS is generating is causing gay people to be scapegoated and it's sort of like, if we beat and kill these people. I saw there was an Oprah Winfrey show with people who had been convicted of carrying out anti-gay violence. And she interviewed these people, and it was terrifying. One of them absolutely stood up and said, they are responsible for AIDS and they must die. And as soon as I can, I will do it again. So it's that the connection. It's always been, as far back as we can all remember, beating up the little kid on the block who looked weak, the little boy on the block who looked weakest, who was sort of effeminate. That's a cultural thing. But this is very related to AIDS. The fact that these numbers mushroomed after 1983, which was basically when AIDS started to, it was named AIDS. And then, and then really took off in 1986, which is when did Rock Hudson die, 1984, 85, and AIDS became a thing.
Do you think those same people would do that kind of violence against a heterosexual who has AIDS?
Well, it's, I think that, and we'll talk about this when we get to the AIDS thing, but the reality is AIDS, just to quickly answer it, AIDS is sort of burning itself out, and so it's got a long way to go, but it's burning itself out in the gay male community because of awareness, and a lot of safe sex stuff is happening, so that it stopped rising. Okay, it's still there, but the percentage is stopped rising. But where it's skyrocketing, where the percentages are taking off, are among poor people of color. And in fact, in some of the hostels in Chicago for people with AIDS, everyone who lives there are black or Hispanic. And so...
just from using dirty needles?
Well, it's all sorts of different things. It's predominantly come from drug use, some of it from prostitution, and also a lot of it because both the black and Hispanic communities are intensely homophobic. So that anyone who, that black and Hispanic gay men tend to be very much in the closet, so that they will, you know, go quietly over here and have their you know, relations with men, and then come back and be good, upstanding, supposedly straight people in their community and pass the disease into the community. There's a lot of stuff on that, and I don't want to get too much into it, but it just, the connection between the two things, I think, really is something we need to look at as a country. That what's happening with what's happening around AIDS, period, and then what's happening that this kind of violence is being justified in the name of revenge for AIDS is very terrifying. It's very terrifying to me, and it says something about what could happen in the future. I don't know what more to say about it.
I've been in groups where otherwise intelligent people have said things like, well, you know, it's sad, but it's just like tuberculosis. When people got tuberculosis, you farmed them out to a sanitarium, and that's what needs to happen with people with AIDS. When, I mean, you know, medically we know that AIDS is not spread the same way that tuberculosis was. There's no such thing as a tuberculosis Mary parallel. There's basically only two ways to get AIDS, and it can't be spread casually. But, you know, even though supposedly we know that, we don't know that. People don't believe that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I guess medieval people look pretty dumb for scapegoating, but I guess you can see it, maybe it's just sort of a natural impulse,
mm-hmm,
to blame and isolate.
When you read where homosexuals also be pretty violent and doing things to other people.
Are you talking about child molesters?
Well, partly, but I don't. You read about a lot of violent things that they do.
Like what?
Well, I don't think it was specific cases right now, but it just seemed like, I suppose, part of their being activists.
But okay, I just want to get what you're saying. That not physical violence, you're not, I mean, going and beating up people.
Yeah, some of that too.
Well, it's, I mean, because I want to make one thing sort of clear about child molesting, and that is that child molesting is not a homosexual act. Child molesting is child molesting, and child molesting is sexual violence. And it is John Wayne Gacy is not John Wayne Gacy because he was homosexual. John Wayne Gacy was a man who had perpetrated sexual violence, and I just want to get that real clear on them. And in fact, you know, there are statistics that show that really most child molesters do not identify themselves as gay, as homosexuals, and so that there's a whole big thing there. And I guess on the second point, I guess I just want to say around activism, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow, is that there, in any activist struggle over the history the history of the planet, but, you know, let's look at the struggle for civil rights for black people or for Native Americans. You had Martin Luther King and you had the Black Panthers. You had treaty organizations and tribal organizations working for in the system stuff, and you have AIM, the American Indian Movement, and the Wounded Knee settlements. I mean, the choice of whether you embrace violence as a political act, as a as a what a method or a tactic is very different, I think, I would like to say, than someone walking up to someone on the street and beating them to death because they look like they're faggots, or lynching of black men in the 30s in the South. I see those two things equal. I don't see the political choice between being violent or nonviolent as equal to those things. I think there's a big difference. I'm not saying I advocate political violence, but I'm just saying that they're very different. One is a choice about a revolution or about what a change that one wants to see come, and the other is a violation of personhood.
I would guess that there are gays and lesbians that can do violent things just like there are homosexuals who do violent
things. That are homosexuals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
hetero,
I'm sorry.
Violence, yeah. Violence is violence.
Well, that's just a human thing that human beings do, and it's wrong wherever it's found.
Yeah.
I don't recall ever reading that one particular group happens to do more violence than any other. I have never read that.
There have been a couple of cases of people supposedly spitting on police and saying, now you have AIDS, when they're being arrested and stuff like that.
Those were probably the D.C. police.
They who wore gloves and dang it. Yeah, that's right.
Can I just say something? Your presentation makes me think of, and I believe that for those of us who are not gay activists but supportive of gay activists and certainly supportive of civil rights, period, across the board, that the job for us really is not dissimilar to the kinds of things that we had to say and do and argue back in 1967 and 68. And as a person living in Chicago, it was particularly a pointed struggle, and that of course was the black-white struggle for civil rights for black people. And where I grew up, it was all white. Just a couple miles away it was black, but the antipathy and the fear, real deep fear of the unknown, was so great amongst the white people that I grew up with and went to school with and would have the social studies arguments with every day about, you know, they'd say, well, let them move in with you then, you know, and that sort of thing. And it's a very touchy kind of argument because, you know, I was sitting there just as ignorant of actual experience because I was part of the white ghetto, but I just had a mindset that said this isn't right. I don't think, I don't know a lot better because of the situation, but I really don't think it's right. And here was someone experiencing the same thing as I, but being trained by their parents. You know, my parents were good Catholics, God love them, and they taught me something else. But here were they saying, prove it. What do you know? I believe all the garbage I've heard. Blacks are dirty, shiftless, lazy, have a lot of babies and mess up the neighborhood, and et cetera. And a lot of white people in Chicago anyway just went running out of homes, you know, that they worked their lives to save and buy because they believed someone else's line that was also based on ignorance or lack of experience with. Well, I see it as real similar. When you take just the issue of civil rights as a slant on looking at the homosexual population, there's no doubt that that is something as free-thinking Americans who call ourselves part of a democracy with a small d should rally against. And yet it is a very similar kind of trick bag, particularly when you're talking to people in parts of the country where there may not be a strong homosexual community that is, or even a weak one, that is friendly, that is accessible to folks. And it's also a thing people hide from seeing, you know, in their own neighborhood. Their best Their best storekeeper up the road may be a gay man or woman,
mm-hmm.
who just because they've known him 20, 30, 40 years, is not someone this person chooses to see as gay. But if that person's rights were trampled on in front of their neighbor, you could bet their neighbor would only think for a minute before coming to their defense, only secondarily realizing that this is one of those feared homosexuals, someone I've known all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like throwing that out there because when you look at that question just from the angle of civil rights, it's so clear.
Mm-hmm.
There are other places that it isn't so clear and it's much scarier and harder to talk to people about, but I think I'm just like with women, with blacks, with any minority in our country, we're Americans, we're supposed to stick up for folks, particularly when they're getting beat up.
It was
a good presentation.
Well, I didn't know. I went off and said to my friend Sarah, help me, I want to put together some things on these various things. Give me information. And I did this like 2 days before I left to come here. And I sat down with this stuff and started to read and started to think about my own life and it was like I got politicized over the issues of violence. And of the legality question, I think is just a whole the legality question. I just think it's funny, in some ways. I mean, the United States just never got itself together on this one. I mean, if you go here, you're illegal. If you go there, you're legal. If you go here, you're legal, and you also have civil rights. But if you go there, it doesn't make any difference. And so here, but what is frightening is that the Supreme Court comes out, the highest law of the land, basically justifying a disappearance of the right to privacy for any American. That's a precedent now on the right to privacy, and that's real scary. but the violent stuff is just so. That's why I said the thing in the end. I mean. When was the last time, let's think about it, where people were murdered because of a fact of their reality, when their churches were burned, when women were raped, when education people were harassed out of education. Think of those poor black students trying to get into Central High School in Arkansas. Did they get an education? they were harassed out of their education. The same thing happening at colleges and universities around the country. What's the difference? What's the qualitative difference? What gives the dean of a school the right to say you're not welcome here? I mean, that is civil rights. And the last time that happened in this country, we all morally stood up and said no. Although we had to be sort of shook into it, we had to shake our government. But I don't see the difference, and I just want to put that in people's heads as something to think about before we get, into all of this discussion of the tricky stuff that we'll probably talk about tonight. There's a big difference between being able to have a job, live in a house, and have the same rights as every other person in this country, and all of the other theorizing and theologizing and all the other things that go on over here. That what's really happening out here is that people are dying and people are losing their jobs, and people don't have the same basic civil rights by virtue of their citizenship as everybody else, and also are four times more likely to be the victim of violent crime.
If it's illegal, then why are people doing it?
What?
If it's illegal, if they're getting beat up, why are people continuing with gay rights and all? Why do they keep on?
Well, to keep on doing what?
Blown on whatever they're doing. I'm just a country boy, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but I.
Keep on trying to. What's illegal? The violence
No,
being gay.
Being gay.
Because it's not clear. Nowhere does it say that it's illegal. It says
it's... It's also like, if there was a law in some state that said being a man is illegal, there's really not a way that you could stop being a man. And so how could you...
I don't know.
Well, it's that kind of question.
It is.
I mean, essentially, you're asking something that Susan doesn't want to answer the way you're asking it, because legally, it doesn't say there's, it's a law against being gay. It's a law against doing an act that, in fact, a lot of straight people also take part in their private sexual lives. So, but the question you're asking is basically, why don't people stop being gay if there's a law against it? Because they are born gay, you know? It's because they are who they are. And I know that that question comes out of believing that there's a choice. And this group had an earlier session this week, which was really good on that, because what we got to was, instead of calling it sexual preference, the correct thing is to call it sexual orientation. Because if you're a young man or a young woman who starts, you know, puberty or whatever at 13 and goes through that whole ritual, awful as it is, and finds out at the end of it that you're not someone who you're a girl who doesn't chase after boys, and that you're a boy that doesn't chase after girls, that's not something that you can choose to change. You could choose to enter a monastery. A lot of people did that over the course of years. A lot of people entered the nunnery and the monastery, et cetera, et cetera, and sooner or later, things started happening under those ceilings. But it's not like this is brand new with the 20th century.
No.
The word lesbos is Greek and way back, you know, like, and this is all traced way back. And it's not
like people
have a choice at that point. Or should they be called upon to change what they do behind closed doors, just like a husband and wife does what they do behind closed doors?
Well, it's to carry that thought forward, it was something I forgot to say the other day about this choice versus, I mean, you know, preference and choice distinction, is that the scientific data is not clear. I mean, let's go right back down the scientific data. And I wanted to remind people that in nature, there are homosexual animals, okay? you know, there in most species of animals, a certain percentage of the animals are homosexual animals. I mean, that is indeed true.
Wow.
So the scientist and all of them.
I've seen gay elephants.
Yeah, elephants. Actually, elephants are one of the ones that definitely.
Well, we actually
also higher level stuff. I mean, you know, dolphins. Dolphins, definitely. So we're talking an area that's got so much gray in it that you cannot possibly talk about the word choice. You cannot. It's not a functional word. And so if you don't talk about choice, because you can't talk about choice, then you're really talking about it's very simplistic to say being born that way, but it's very equivalent to being born with black skin, being born Asian, being born a woman. I mean, it's very equivalent to that, and by virtue of that, you can't do anything about it, and you don't deserve to be beaten up, murdered, denied housing, denied access to education because of it. And yeah. Ingrid.
Maybe one way to understand that better would be if we would turn the tables and say that it were illegal to be heterosexual
right.
in this country. So we were all required, if we wanted to express sexual feelings with another person, we were required to express those feelings with someone of our own sex. And you try to think of how, if you're heterosexual, try to think of how that feels inside you, to think that you can't have the sexual feelings that you have, which is attraction to someone of the opposite sex, but the only way you can express sexual feelings is with someone of your same sex. And that, you know, if it doesn't sit in you, if it doesn't sit well, if it doesn't fit, if it doesn't feel right, then you're just sort of up a creek. And I think if we sort of required people who were had more sexual attraction to someone of the same sex to only express sexual feelings for someone of the opposite sex, that would be saying, prostitute yourself, or be, I mean, it's such a violation to think of having sex with someone that you're not attracted to.
Right.
It's just really not healthy. It doesn't feel right. You know it isn't right to have sex with someone you're not attracted to and don't feel sexual feelings for.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're doing by talking about this is opening up a real new idea to some of us who do not realize that you're born this way and that you cannot change. I mean,
but there's a
new idea to me.
There's a group of people. We were in a meeting where half the dining room was a group of young men, about 20 to 40 years old, and through a set of circumstances, we found out that they had all, after they became Christians, turned from being homosexual into heterosexual.
Check with them in 10 years. I mean it. No, in the moment, I just
let
think check
saying,
with them.
Let her finish saying,
all right.
Jack.
I know. And,
in fact, one of them gave a lecture to our group of people, and he brought out, he was the president of this group. They're called the Exodus, that came out of this. And
interesting.
He said, as far as sex is concerned, the Bible says you either are married to a person of the opposite sex or you don't have sex. And he quoted scripture after scripture. And we know that in the Bible it says that in the last days, people's hearts or minds will be darkened, that women will lust for women and men for men. And we know, and none of them will enter the kingdom of God if they go that path. And so I think it's an entirely different thing if you're born a woman or a man or a black or a thing like that, because God well, of course he lives a homosexual too, but he says that is not the way to go, and look what he did to Sodom and Gomorrah because of the life that they lived.
Well, I think the only thing I want to say back to that is what I said the other day, and that is that I also believe that God made creation according to a perfect plan, and he put me in it. And so my job is to just try as hard as I can to be the best cog in that plan I can be. And there's got to be some reason in God's plan that I was born me, which I know I was. And if that means that I'm not going to find salvation, well, then that means that I'm just going to have to do as good a job as I can here on this planet while I'm here. And meanwhile, I don't want to get beat up for being it. But I really want to discuss, I think we'll talk a lot more about what you just said tonight in the forum, and I would invite you to come to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for us not to think that we will come out of this all agreeing.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to respect what you said. Mm-hmm. But I think the issue that Susan is talking about now not so much that, but rather civil rights. I think especially the women in the group, all of us can remember when we didn't have the rights that we can now claim. And many of us think that we still don't have the rights that men can claim. And all of us know what it is to be frightened of violence. I ask any of you women, if you live in a city, if you dare walk at night by yourself. I know I don't. and if for no other reason than realizing the kind of fear that we have, we certainly ought to be concerned when some groups begin to suffer simply because of who they are. Because once violence proliferates, none of us is safe. Mm-hmm. Any group can be picked on, and that's why civil rights are so very important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, extremely. No one is for violence of any kind against anybody.
Mm-hmm. Pat, will you start? Did you have something you wanted to finish saying? Because we should cut here, but I wanted to let you.
No, I just appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, I'm learning a lot.
Well, we can all learn a little bit more tomorrow, where we'll talk about political activism. I am a political activist, and I'm not a lesbian political activist. I'm not very involved in the activism that goes on in my city, but I know enough about it and have spent enough time with it, and involved with people who are. And I just want to talk tomorrow. We'll sort of talk political strategies, not political strategies, but sort of the. There was a march in Washington just a little while ago that turned a lot of gay and lesbian people into activists, and they're now coming back and sort of trying to make themselves visible and make some things happen. And we'll talk about the state of that tomorrow at 10:45. And I would invite everybody to come tonight to Forum, where we will deal a little. Ingrid, maybe you want to say something about it. Look at more of these.
Well, I think we'll all have a chance to have more discussion tonight about the issue and to talk about our feelings about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. I think it's a chance for the community to talk to each other, because I do think that as Christians, this is an issue that we need to take seriously and share with one another how we're feeling and what we're thinking. And we want to hold Holden Village as a place apart where we can do some Christian dialogue on thorny issues of our time, in a place that we can listen to each other fairly and safely and really express our thoughts and struggle with some of these issues. So tonight should be an opportunity for that at 8:30.
8:30 in here, and thank you all very much, and we can carry on this dialogue for the rest of the week. Thanks.